This is Dave Gloetz. Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky, who writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and who's here with me today on day 7?
Of September? Oh, the teacher strike.
What the heck could I possibly be talking
about? I know. Yes, it would be day. It's Tuesday, so it's day 7.
And today we're talking about your article, appropriately enough, titled, Why Chicago Teachers Hate ROM, that appeared in The Reader on September 13th, 2012. It is.
I did not write the headline, but I think we all know who wrote it. Mick Dumke, a.k.a.
The Great Mick Dumke.
Yes, sir.
And it pretty much describes the article. You go through sort of the litany of the things that the Emanuel administration and the mayor in particular have done.
And the previous mayor.
Right. The last, I guess, 3 years, yeah, essentially is what you're covering. To cause perhaps what we saw on Sunday, we're speaking while the Chicago Teachers Union strike still continues, where teachers sort of rejected what the union bargaining unit brought to the table for them without seeing the whole agreement, I guess, was part of the rub. But let's talk about some of the things in your article. First of all, you talked about just a detail here that Chicago Public Schools raised the pay of CEO Jean-Claude Brizard and most of his central office appointees over what their predecessors were making. Could you explain to the listeners how you know that?
Anybody wants to look at central office payroll, well, first of all, there is a payroll on the website. I call it the Ben Jarofsky payroll site because they put it up there after I complained that they didn't have it. That was really nice of them.
And this is on the Chicago Public Schools website.
That is correct, Senator. So that if you wanted to do a comparison, you could take a look at old payrolls with employees who had the positions versus new payrolls with employees who now have the positions. Similarly, you could take a look at the budget, which tells you what was budgeted for a position in previous years as opposed to this year. Actually, this year's budget, this is a whole other story which I have not delved into, is harder and more confusing to read under the guise of making it friendlier. They give you a whole bunch of like pie charts that you don't need and little color stuff that it's utterly extraneous and confusing as opposed to just line items. Anyway, one way or another, you could piece together the fact that Brizard, what is he now, at 250? I get it all mixed up.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Huberman was 237. God, if I can rattle off these numbers, I mean, that's really got issues. Huberman was 237. I believe Duncan was 213. And Vallis was 192. Oh, my God. I can't believe I know that.
And I think you wrote elsewhere that each one of these guys has been smarter than the rest.
Yes, right. So, of course, you know, it's like reader writers. We just get smarter with the years. So, anyway, that's how you would piece it together. You, too, can be investigative journalists at home. But it's getting more and more difficult because the Board of Ed is getting slicker and slicker with their presentations to make it harder for you to get this basic information.
I don't know if this is coincidence, but in the city of Chicago budget, 2012, for the first time, they eliminated the table of contents.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that dastardly table of content.
Well, which is helpful because each city department is funded by different funds. And the best way to tell is like look for the city department in the table of contents. Now you got to flip through the whole darn thing.
And I'm sure there's a reform reason for doing that that Mayor Rahm will explicate.
I'm actually compiling a table of contents.
Well, we're not on a tangent here, but almost all of these budgets under the guise of being transparent are less transparent than what came before them. And harder and more confusing to read and understand. So we're actually going back in time while we say we're advancing.
In the union's negotiations with Chicago Public Schools, one of the most widely reported areas of contention involves teacher evaluations. Mm-hmm. Under the proposed new system, at least in the summary of the contract reported by the union this past weekend, during the first 2 years of the contract, at least 25% of a teacher's evaluation must stem from how students perform on various assessments and how the students grow in knowledge and skills from the beginning to the end of the school year. And one way to measure that is with standardized tests, of course. In the third year and after that, the figure would be 30%. And WLS-TV reported that Chicago Public Schools wanted student growth to count for about 40%. Of the teacher evaluation.
Wow, it's unbelievable.
So it looks like the proposed new contract will limit CPS to 30%, which is the minimum set by recent state law.
Yeah, in their idiocy, our state leaders passed that law.
So my question is, how should a teacher be evaluated? I guess currently principals have complete responsibility where they make two observations per year, or they're supposed to make two observations per year. They are their surrogates like the vice principal. So thinking about the state law, which mandates that we're going to sort of take it out of the principal's hands. In one sense, it seems to me like that's micromanaging mm-hmm. the teacher evaluations. But what's your overall assessment of how teachers should be evaluated?
Dave, I've not written about this yet specifically, but I think about it a lot. And I believe that this is one of the biggest, phoniest issues I've seen thrown out in the education debate forever. I think that in general, I have made the statement that teachers get far too much credit for the stupendous things kids do, and way, way, way too much blame for what goes wrong.
Because there are so many other influences.
There's so many other influences and factors. So this whole notion of evaluating teachers is tied to an absurd premise, which is that the teaching world is divided into good teachers, which we now call angels and saints, and bad teachers, which is everybody else, most likely those in a union. And it's those bad teachers who are clogging up the system and preventing us from hiring all the good teachers out there. Like, there's tens of thousands of good teachers in the universe just dying to come to Chicago and work in sweltering hot classrooms without air conditioners for lunatics like Rahm Emanuel. So the whole thing is such an absurd premise. I can't believe we waste our time talking about it. And yet, this is what it's come to. So I said, in their infinite idiocy, the state reps passed this new rule. What is it, 30%? Is that what it is? These tests aren't even supposed to be anything more than like helpful barometers of where students are and what help they need, where their strengths and weaknesses are. I mean, we could talk forever and ever about how some people inherently do well at tests. Other people, like me, don't do well at tests. And so I'm very sympathetic to people, because I don't do well at these tests, who don't do well themselves. You know, my mind wanders, I go on tangents, much like this interview, and I don't really focus on the job at hand at a test. I don't know how significant that is in the total scheme of thing anyway, but suddenly we're clinging to these tests as the fundamental, most important observation we can make about a student's performance, a teacher's performance. So I feel like it's a trick bag. I feel like we've been pushed into this situation by, I basically reduce it to like the right wing, which essentially wants to crush a teachers union. So you come up with a phony premise, then you come up with a meaningless standard that nobody can really reach to govern a teacher's performance so that you can make teachers vulnerable. And just as important, when unions rise, as they should, to oppose it, then you can have an easy club to bash the unions. Oh, they just want to protect bad teachers because they don't want good teachers to work in the public schools. You know, because that's what unions are all about, promoting bad teaching. So that's my reaction. I feel as though the whole issue is overstated anyway. Whatever evaluation they have at Nutrier, where Rahm went, which is the highest scoring school in the universe with all the highest achievers, including our very own mayor of the city of Chicago, that's what we should use in Chicago. And I could tell you this, they went for years without any 30% evaluation. Somehow or other, young Rahm Emanuel got through the public schools of Nutrier without having his teacher held to that 30% criteria.
But now, because of state law, even Nutrier teachers will have to be evaluated.
One of the bizarre ironies of this cockamamie law, which was concocted largely to bash the hell out of the Chicago Teachers Union, is that Nutrier has to put up with this insanity. I'm curious how those teachers are reacting there. I think this all points to the fact that we've gone way too far as a larger society in terms of bashing teachers. And we really have to pull back, because ultimately we're going to hurt ourselves. Well, we already have.
Why don't you tell me something about your perspective on the strike that you haven't reported?
Later this afternoon, on Tuesday, September 18th, the delegates of the Chicago Teachers Union will convene and have a vote as to whether they should suspend the strike. If they vote to continue the strike tomorrow, Wednesday, all the lawyers representing all the parties will be in court, because Mayor Rahm has requested an injunction from a Cook County judge to force the teachers back. So I got a feeling one way or the other, the teachers will be back at work definitely within a week. Of course, I'm probably going to be wrong in that one, too, because I was really wrong. I didn't think they were going to strike out in the first place.
No, I didn't ask for that prediction, but you gave it to me anyway.
Well, I wrote about it in the blog. But from what a couple of teachers have told me, it looks as though the preliminary talk, the vote, or, you know, informal vote, is that most teachers want to go back to work, want to suspend the strike, and that the greatest pool of resistance is coming from teachers in Southside schools that are under threat of being closed by Mayor Rahm. And I can understand why those teachers would be nervous, because under the rules, the way we do these things is essentially when they close a school, they send all the kids to some other school, regardless of how well it's performing, regardless of whether they have to walk through rival gang territory, regardless of whether there's rival gangs in that school. I mean, again, this has never been about the needs of children. And then the teachers lose their jobs at the school that gets closed. They're all branded bad teachers, because if they were good teachers, those kids would be performing as well as students in New Trier, to use my favorite example, where the mayor went. Did I tell you the mayor went to New Trier?
I get the impression. Yeah. I've heard it somewhere.
Anyway, he doesn't want Chicago to have any of the great things that New Trier have, like all the math and the music and drama and science, et cetera, et cetera. He just wants the students to perform as well as New Trier kids.
But apparently the proposed new contract would allow, in the case of a school closure, allow the teachers to follow their kids to whatever school they were sent to.
That's in the language. Then you get to the next issue, as you start phasing out all these schools and replacing them with charters. Those charters are by and large non-union. And so, you know, you're basically crushing the union through attrition. So that's really the big concern of the union, which is why I always tell teachers, you should organize those charters.
Well, you've written something about that too.
Yes.
Thinking about this issue of closing schools while opening schools, again, there's no official word of schools being closed, but there's a lot of rumor around, you know, 100 schools being closed because this contract, this proposed new contract, will cost money that CPS arguably doesn't have. So, you know, you got to cut costs, you close schools. Meanwhile, the Emanuel administration has made a request for a grant from the Gates Foundation for opening dozens of charter schools at the same time. So it begs the question, why close schools to save money and then ask for more money to open other schools?
Yeah.
Closing schools and opening schools at the same time seems, on its face, ludicrous.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think that the answer to the question that you're raising is that the objective is not to keep public schools open. The objective is to transfer the system into a privatized charter school system as much as they can to weaken the union. I think that's clear. I think it's pretty obvious. It's the unstated goal. I personally don't think it's in the interests of students to have charter schools. I think it's good for students. It's good for a school system to have a teaching force that is represented by a contract so that the teachers have some protections, due process protections. I think you attract better teaching candidates. Better. I hate to use that word, but you make the profession more attractive. I don't know how anybody thinks you would make teaching attractive if you take away all the due process rights that employees have and make them at-will employees, completely at the command of whatever autocrat is running their school system, who's probably influenced by whatever autocrat is running the city of Chicago. I don't even think in their heart of hearts the Mitt Romneys of the world believe that. They certainly don't send their children to schools run by autocrats where the teaching force is completely at the mercy of, you know, whatever tyrant. They'd send their kids to private schools that generally have unionized teaching forces that treat their teachers like professionals.
This is my sort of willful naivety of suburbs. Is it true that most suburban school districts are unionized?
Yes. The only one that I know of right offhand that isn't, I believe either Deerfield or Palatine is not unionized.
But they're an exception.
Yes, that's the exception. New Trier has got a union. I wrote a story many years ago, about 6 years ago, where I interviewed a New Trier teacher and visited his classroom, and he was a union official, and he showed me their contract. It was a great contract. You know, it was a great school system. It's the model I think Chicago should be following, actually.
Some of these Chicago newspaper columnists, many of whom live in the suburbs, should be reporting on this because it's their turf.
Yes, they should be reporting that the towns they live in have a unionized workforce that's got due process rights for its teachers, and it's got classes like art, drama, music. They got intramurals in the high school. That's my pet peeve. We don't even have intramurals. I'm just a big intramural guy, dude. The irony is embedded in all this. They're really hard to take. To quote Dave Glowatz, I can't even remember the quote.
If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
Yes, there's plenty of things to be outraged about here in Chicago. And I really hope the teachers call off their strike. Let's hope it ends today. I'm beaming out positive vibrations as I speak.
On that ethereal note, Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
If you'd like to hear more of our interviews, go to MrRadio.org, where you'll find instructions on how to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any of our interviews. Or you can search on iTunes for Ben Jarofsky or for me, Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.